The Brad Sessmatt Show, broadcasting live.
It's good Tuesday. Thanks for being with us. John Wilner, Wilner Hotline, all things Pac-12 related. The Pac-12 meetings are taking place in Scottsdale this week. I don't want that to get lost in the shuffle with the Suns and DeAndre Hopkins and the Diamondbacks playing pretty well. Big story is the Pac-12 meetings and time to have some radical new ideas, I think. If you're a fan of the Pac-12, if you're a fan of college football, if you're a fan of Arizona State, U of A, whoever, you've got to look at this conference and say, you guys are so far behind others. So what are the big hot button issues that are being talked about? They started yesterday. They go today, tomorrow, and they finish up Thursday. I don't think there'll be anything in terms of announcements because they have to go back and meet with the chancellors in a couple of weeks. But this is a big week for college football here in the Valley around the Pac-12. So John Wilner will be with us. That comes up shortly. Opening comments brought to you by Desert Financial Credit Union. Desert Financial Credit Union, taking care of you, taking care of your business. 400,000 members they just crossed over. That is Desert Financial Credit Union. We do appreciate their support. I was at the Suns game last night. The energy and enthusiasm in the building, I didn't think it was as crazy as it was for New Orleans. I just didn't feel the vibe. You know, yeah, it was loud and there was all the energy of the game, pregame, and the Suns came out and they shot lights out. And then Dallas kind of settled in. And the Suns were really in control for almost all of this game. There was a moment late where I think the gap was down to 6 or 4. But I never felt like they were going to lose this game. And 51 rebounds. And they were throwing guys to the ground or the court. There were bodies being thrown around by the Suns last night. They were like the bullies of Jefferson Street last night. You're going to play that physical. And the Suns were last night. Oh, I'm so sorry for that elbow, Luca, said nobody except Jay Crowder. I'm so sorry for that little clip, Chris Paul. You know, it was chippy, I thought, last night. You know, the Suns, they had something about them. JaVale McGee, oh, I'm so sorry I came under you and tried to catch you. How about JaVale McGee on a fast break going coast to coast for a dunk? How about that? So they had all this stuff going on last night, and they've won 10 straight over Dallas. I don't put too much into that. Everybody likes to throw that number around. Regular season doesn't matter. You know, what they do in the postseason, and when you shoot 50%, the Suns have yet to be in a game where they've shot less than 50%. That's amazing to me for postseason basketball. I mean, that really is something for them. And so, yeah, I mean, I heard Monty's comments at the end and DeAndre Ayton too about how they got a little bit careless. But at the same time, Dallas was just bombing away. Luka's amazing. Luka is fun to watch. You can boo him all day long. That's what you pay your money for. You got to boo guys like Luka if you're a Suns fan. I'm not a Suns fan. I'm just somebody who likes to go watch sports and take it all in. I look at Luka and it's like, oh my gosh, this guy's a beast. He's amazing. He's fun to watch. Watching Luka against Mikal Bridges, I will take that all night long. That's like watching Jay Crowder against Draymond Green in the next round because guess what? Let me fill you on something. There's not a chance that Dallas is going to win 4 games. You know, Iron Man Jared Nielsen is rolling on this show. If this goes down as one of my worst predictions ever, there's no way they're going to win 4 games from the Suns. Forget about it. It's a one-man team. Some nice complimentary players. But the Suns basically steamrolled them last night. It was a methodical victory. At points in the game, it was just kind of like, okay, yeah, you cut the gap. Chris Paul's over on the side, a little bit longer than usual. Devin Booker, hamstring doesn't look like it's bothering him. And so they're up a game, and can Dallas, the only way is if Dallas is able to push the Suns defensively and have them shoot less than 50%. That's it. This has got to be a game where Jason Kidd looks at his team and says, guys, you got to get them around 47, 46. They shoot 50. We're not going to win. And I don't think they're going to. And if you get 51 rebounds, Ayton, nobody could stay with Ayton last night. Ayton had 25 and he missed a couple of easies. He could have had 30 very easily last night. So game number 2 is tomorrow night. yesterday after we left, when we last were together, I get a text, DeAndre Hopkins suspended by the NFL PEDs. So, you know, a six-game suspension, was that the interpretation on that is he tried to mask it. That's the interpretation. To me, you know, his comments last night, I'm just going to read them verbatim. In my 10-year career, I have never tested positive for using performance-enhancing drugs. To learn that my November test came back with trace elements of a banned substance, I was confused and shocked. First of all, do you really think DeAndre Hopkins sat down, had a little card? I was confused and shocked. The answer is no. Do you think the Cardinals knew before the draft with Hollywood Brown? The answer is yes. Do I think this stuff gets leaked out when it's the start of playoffs in a city where everybody's focused on the basketball team? Yes. There's a lot there. I have to chuckle just because you've seen it through the years. So here are the Cardinals, and we had Fabs on yesterday. I understand this is fantasy, but I think it works hand in hand. So the Cardinals a year ago, if you're talking about who do they have for Kyler Murray, I'm not going to use the term weapon. I hate that. Who did they have for Kyler Murray that was part of the offense? Well, you had James Conner and Chase Edmonds. Chase Edmonds is gone. That means the load falls on James Conner. Do I think James Conner can hold up for an entire season? I don't think any running back can hold up for an entire season. So then you have DeAndre Hopkins, A.J. Green, Christian Kirk, Rondale Moore, and the famous Andy Isabella, which should have been DK Metcalf. And I'm looking at that and saying, okay, we don't know the schedule. Schedule comes out next week, the 12th. So a week from Thursday, the schedule will be out. And he's going to miss the first six games. He's going to be allowed to practice, which is weird. But he'll still be around, you know, game shape and all that stuff they'll talk about. I think for the Cardinals, the best thing that could happen for them on this, obviously, is their schedule comes out and it's a little bit soft on the front end. They're not going to be favored to win the division just to begin with. They're not. And they're probably right there as a wild card team. It's fortunate they have 17 games. So you miss six. It's 11 games where he should be here. But if you look back last season, DeAndre Hopkins was hurt last year. Like DeAndre Hopkins, I think, what would it be? It'd be about 14 or 15 games in a two-year cycle that he'll been on the field because of injury and now this. And so, you know, you look at that and say the amount that they gave up to get him, and now they give up a first-round pick to patch the hole. We don't know. We'll never know, because they never will say so publicly. We'll never know if he didn't test positive, if this didn't hit, that the Cardinals would have taken a player of greater need than wide receiver. And some will argue, well, that was their greatest need. I would not say that was their greatest need. You know, pass rusher, you know, help on the offensive line for Kyler Murray. But you go out and you go this direction, you burn a first-round pick, and you hope that it comes through. I mean, you're really putting a lot into Hollywood Brown, A.J. Green, and Rondale Moore. And Rondale Moore, as the season progressed, I thought he wore down a little bit. Now, that's a typical rookie, and it's a long season. But even with that wide receiving core, you can't tell me that it's still not a point of contention, point of concern, until DeAndre Hopkins comes back. And then you're going to hear that, well, he hasn't played much. He's got to get back in shape and all that stuff. That'll be like weeks 7 and 8. Where does the bye week fall? Probably the worst thing that can happen to the Cardinals is if the schedule comes out and it's a week where the bye is taking place in those first 6 weeks. I think the later that you have a bye, the better it is for your team, because you got to find a slot somewhere to get healthy. So you're just going to have to bite the bullet for those six games. But gosh, man, I talk about Arizona State and Always Something University. In our sports market, it is always something. It's like, can you catch a break somewhere along the way? And to that end, it leads us over to the Diamondbacks. So I have been saying, I will sit here and take credit on this one. I have been saying that Brent Strom, who most people don't even know who Brent Strom is. I grew up in San Diego, Brent Strom with Randy Jones, the lefty on the mound. This is me as a kid, okay? And Brent Strom comes here after doing great work in Houston with Lance McCullers Jr. and that whole staff. And I really believe that Brent Strom is big part of the reason why guys like Zach Gallen, Mad Bum, Merrill Kelly, those three guys, okay, Merrill Kelly, Mad Bum, Zach Gallen have a combined earned run average of 1.24. After yesterday, Gallen went 6 1/3 and gave up 2 hits. And the Diamondbacks win again. So they're going to have a, you know, they're in a space where they won 5 of 7. They're going to have a winning road trip in all likelihood when you go to St. Louis and you go to Miami, or a 500 road trip. And I would take that. I would take that all day long. You know, you've already won 3 on this trip. And add to that, they're 11-13. You're saying, oh yeah, it's a bad record. Guess what? It's not a great team. It's not even a good team. It's a young team. And so the pitching at the top of the rotation has been great. They're 2 games under .500. They're 4 back in the West. Yeah, that's going to change. I get it. But to see some progress, I like how they play. I like watching the kids go out and play. And you'll say, yeah, but, you know, it's Miami. And, well, look, what did they do to the Dodgers last week? They took 2 or 3 from the Dodgers. Sure, when it's later in the year, the Dodgers usually smack them over the head and Arizona's roadkill. That's what it is. But for now, I'll take it. All right, John Wilner. So, again, the Pac-12 meetings of athletic directors and coaches, primarily football, but other sports too, is here in the Valley today. Yesterday, today, tomorrow, and Thursday morning. So what are these meetings all about? We'll talk with John Wilner. That is next. On a Tuesday, I'm Brad Sussmat. All right, looky here. It's John Wilner in the Wilner Mobile, Wilner Hotline. You are not outside a parking lot in Scottsdale, which is fine. You're plugged in. What's going on with the Pac-12 meetings? So I want to have you on for a few minutes. Just in general terms, what do you expect, John, to come out of these meetings that are going on presently in Scottsdale with everyone involved in the Pac-12 athletic realm?
Yeah, it's the first time. They do this every year. This is the first one they've had in person in Scottsdale since 2019. What I expect is a lot of progress to be made on a bunch of issues, but no decisions. Part of the reason there's not going to be any firm decisions is that the big stuff, stuff that involves money, the stuff that involves, you know, competitive balance, the presidents and chancellors have got to approve, and they're not in Scottsdale. They'll meet in San Francisco in a couple of weeks. So if there's anything that comes out of these meetings that is basically at mile 26 of the marathon, the presidents and chancellors can take it the last 0.2 in a couple of weeks. But there should be a lot of discussion, a lot of progress made on what the Pac-12 wants to do on a number of strategic fronts, including football and how they want to pursue the structure of the football product. With the delay in the playoff expansion, you know, they want to try to get as many teams in the playoff as they can. But what was going to work for them in a 12-team playoff doesn't necessarily work in a 4-team playoff. Right. And I think we're stuck with 4 for the next 4 years.
It feels to me like collectives and the NIL and how to pay players and all that is at the forefront of discussion. And I'm looking at it saying, well, this was stuff that was coming a long time ago. You know, this started last July, but it was coming a year and a half ago. Like, the SEC is 100 miles ahead of where the Pac-12 is. Yet I have to believe, going back to your original thought, that there's these big ticket items that they're addressing. That's got to be near the top of the list to take to the chancellors. And I don't know if the chancellors in the Pac-12 have any idea how big this has gotten. Am I right on this? Am I off base?
I think some of them understand. The ones that are paying more attention to athletics understand. There's not much that the Pac-12 can do about that issue, though, unless either the NCAA provides some oversight, which isn't going to happen, or Congress steps in. There's nothing anybody can do. It's a state-by-state, conference-by-conference, school-by-school deal. It's the Wild West from coast to coast. Mm-hmm. That is absolutely going to be a big part of the discussion, but there's not much league can do. NIL, you know, the way it was intended was how it worked for Jaden Daniels last year, right? Didn't he have a, he had a pizza deal. He had a couple of deals, right?
He had 12 of them, John.
12 of them.
12 of them. They're tiny, but he had 12 of them.
12. But they're all, they were all based on his reputation as ASU's starting quarterback for what had been two previous years. That was how it was intended. The way it's being used is a recruiting inducement. It is a pay-for-play mechanism. You know, you got a five-star kid who's interested in your school where you get a bunch of donors together and they get $1 million and they promise it to the kid. If he goes to your school, he's going to get $1 million. The actual endorsement process is secondary and it has nothing to do with the reputation that the player has made at the school because he isn't even at the school yet.
Or in the case of Jermaine Lole with ASU, where I totally believe the reason why he's in the portal is because there are groups out there at other universities. I've heard the SEC is on him saying,
oh, sure,
come here. And we already have this pot of money together where Arizona State is so far behind, so far behind on this that they're just trying to play catch up and they're drinking water out of a fire hose.
Absolutely. Some schools are further ahead than others. I'd put ASU, you know, they're in like the bottom third of the Pac-12 in terms of what they have been able to do to this point. Mm-hmm. Are they going to be able to catch up with him? I don't know. But, you know, he's a good defensive lineman, so he's a valuable commodity. And a lot of these schools have pools of $10, $20 million sitting there waiting to be used for transfers, for high school products. So I'm sure he's getting a ton of interest, probably from a whole bunch of conferences. We'll see if ASU can do anything. He had to get his name in the portal by May 1st, but he has time to decide what he's going to do. And he could still come back to ASU.
Right.
But, you know, if they lose him, boy, that'll be the final nail in the coffin in what has been a really rough transfer cycle.
Okay. So from that point, so the collectives, the NIL, that's something that's going to be discussed. Not really much they can do outside of that. The conference commissioner that will address it. The other issues are a lot of, and you wrote about this, a lot of things that I think fans better be paying attention to, like getting rid of Pac-12 South, Pac-12 North. Where is that at, John?
That's one of the football strategy decisions they've got to make. And that is pretty much, you know, NIL, that depends on the NCAA and Congress, right?
Sure.
But football strategy is a Pac-12 decision, right? They basically can chart their own course. They're doing a whole lot of data, deep dives on the data to decide, could they maximize their playoff opportunities with divisions or without divisions? 8-game conference schedule, 9-game conference schedule. If they go to a single division like it's set up in basketball, how would they decide which teams get in the football championship? Would it be first place versus second place based on conference record? They could include the college football playoff ranking as a way to decide who's going to get into the championship game. But I think that there's a pretty good chance. I don't see it happening by 2020, by this coming season. I think there's a pretty good chance by 23, we will not see North and South divisions anymore. It'll just be one lineup of 12 teams. And that way you're not risking a 7-5 team from the North upsetting your 10-2 team from the South and knocking that 10-2 team out of the playoff.
Okay. So let me go radical there on you. Couldn't you go down that path and take the top four teams in the Pac-12 and have them 1-4, 2-3, and then have them in a championship game? You're adding another game on top of your championship game. You could go radical because the television contract is going to be coming up too, which I think plays into this for fans on the business side of it. You've got, as the Pac-12, say, we're willing to do all sorts of things to up our ante rather than just saying, well,
yes,
we have the Los Angeles market. We have the Bay Area television market. That stuff sounded good 15 and 20 years ago, and it's still a portion. But if you're not going to be forward thinking and take some risks and gambles, then you're just going to take the top two. Once again, you could be cannibalizing yourself. You could be.
You could. I mean, I actually think that's a fascinating idea. That, because it involves the structure of the football schedule,
yes,
and adding a game, that would have to be approved by the NCAA, which means the SEC, the Big Ten, ACC, Big 12, they would have to agree to do it. And they would obviously only agree to do it if they wanted to do the same thing. And I'm not sure if they do. It's certainly a fascinating thing for the Pac-12 to pursue, but that requires that, that is not, it can't make that decision on its own. It would need a waiver from the NCAA to play that extra game.
But John, I'm what I'm getting at too, on top of that, and I'm just noodling. And I think noodling, when you're so far down the totem pole as the Pac-12 has become, where they're celebrating four kids being taken in the first round of the NFL draft, like it's the greatest thing ever. Well, no, it's not. One school alone in Georgia went crazy with it. So I guess it's, do you need to take the snow globe and shake it up badly in the Pac-12? Are the chancellors, which they've shown no propensity to do that, it's very conservative from my view of the whole conference, but are there some people now saying, wait a minute, guys, we've been lapped times 10. We have to do some radical things to bring us back.
I mean, I think they should make you the associate commissioner for noodling. I mean, that's exactly what they need. But I do think that they are thinking along those lines. The head coaches, the athletic directors, Commissioner George Kliakoff, they are thinking outside the box, alternate universe. Everything is on the table. And I get the sense that the chancellors and presidents are going to be willing to listen to somewhat radical options. Because there's a pretty, most of them have an understanding that the conference needs to do something different. And anything that would help the football product either get exposure or help it competitively, help financially, they're going to think about. I'm pretty confident that, especially at the AD level, they're willing to think about any options.
That's John Wilner in the Wilner Hotline. And we're back with more after this timeout.